Hello. Okay, so we just had another caller come in. Hold on for a second. Caller 732, 732 area code, who's calling?
Dean Clayton.
Dean?
Yes.
Okay, Brother Dean. Okay, hold on. Gotcha. All right. Okay, so I'm going to mute your phone for a minute, Brother Dean.
No problem.
Okay, so as I said, I want to welcome everyone, especially the guests, to this town hall, to this weekly town hall meeting for Black Wallets Matter. We address each other as brother and sister out of a sign of respect and solidarity. During these calls, we don't discuss religion. We don't discuss the black male-female dynamic. And we don't discuss political party affiliation because all of these things, they're all opinion-based. They're all subjective. We could go back and forth forever. And so we don't want to do that. Basically, we all want to come together with the understanding that we are black and that there's a problem in our community, and we want to solve that. The purpose of this movement, Black Wallets Matter, we are an organization of brothers and sisters that understand that the only way we're going to solve the problems in the black community is if we fix the problems ourselves and we use the resources, the money, the things that we have already to fix them. We're not looking for handouts. We're not begging. We're not marching. We're not protesting. We're not kicking and screaming, whining and moaning like little kids. We're being adults about that. We feel that we could come together, put our heads together, formulate a plan, and execute that plan. The tentative plan that we have now is the blueprint. So for those of you who are on the call who didn't get a chance to watch the blueprint on the website after the call or maybe tomorrow, whenever you have a chance, please go to the website www.blackwalletsmatter.org/blueprint and watch the presentation. Some of the things that we discuss tonight will, some of the solutions that we propose, will they have been covered in the blueprint. So that's, you know, where we're coming from. when we say our black dollars, Sister Barbara, hello. When we say our black wallets matter, we don't necessarily mean spending money all the time. Sometimes that means withholding our money. So that means boycotting businesses that are not in alignment with the things that are beneficial to our community. We want to fund our own social projects. So one of the biggest things that we, one of the biggest problems we have in our community is like, you know, youth violence and, you know, our kids are not receiving the education and the training and the things that they need. We want to fund our own community resource centers where we're able to provide that training to our children. If we can get subsidies from the government, and we have a brother that's on a call that's a grant writer and a grant researcher and writer, and, you know, if we can get government subsidies to help with that, that's fine, but we're not going to wait for them to, you know, to before we start taking action. In addition to community resource centers, we will be purchasing large-scale businesses to employ hundreds and thousands of our brothers and sisters. So when I say large-scale businesses, I mean manufacturing plants and supermarket chains and things like that. We had a brother on a call last week. Well, behind the scenes, we did a lot of research, and there are government programs set aside in specific industries, and our goal is to purchase companies in that correspond with those industries so that we can apply for the minority set aside and a minority the minority grant, because there aren't that many minorities in those industries, so it's pretty much a layup for us. And then finally, we will be hiring lawyers and lobbyists in Washington to protect and enforce our civil rights. There are laws already on the books to protect people of color from law enforcement. It's called the Enforcement Act of 1870, and it survives today as Section 2.2 something something, but it is there. It is on the books. It is the law that Eric Holder used in Baltimore and Ferguson in the Freddie Gray and the Michael Brown case to create oversight committees and cannot think about it, but it's basically oversight committees. And that basically means police precinct, police departments that have had racial incidents, they have to be, you know, they have federal oversight for the Department of Justice. This new Attorney General Sessions, he just came in and repealed those acts, repealed those concession decrees, consent decrees. That's what they are. They are consent decrees. He just repealed the consent decree, and that makes our job that much harder because that's exactly what we were fighting for. So Obama and Eric Holder kind of helped us, and now we are starting from ground zero. So currently, so if anyone watched the blueprint, the overall goal of Black Wallets Matter is to have 1 million, is to gain 1 million members, brothers and sisters, over the next 3 to 5 years. Our immediate goal is to raise, is to have 2,000 brothers and sisters so that we can create our first business, our first contribution, or I call them a proof element, put that forward to the Black community and show them, hey, listen, there's an organization that is out here that is actually protecting you, that is concerned about your, you know, about your rights and about things that affect your community. And here's what we're doing. We're not marching. We're not protesting. We're actually doing stuff, especially legally and politically. And so we collect membership dues, and the initiatives that I previously outlined, that's where the membership dues, that's where the money goes. We are set up. We're not a nonprofit organization. We are a B corporation. A B corporation is a benefit corporation, which means that we are able to make money. We're able to make money through our business activities and then spend our profits on our social activities, including the community resource centers, including, the lawyers and the lobbyists and things like that, and write them off and expense them off. So anyone that knows about business, they know that when you're set up properly, you can make all this money and you can expense everything off and basically pay, you know, zero to no taxes. In cases like GE, which is a very, very large company, I think they received a $400 million or $500 million tax credit, right? So the government had to give them back money or whatever it was, and that's crazy. But we're paying attention and we're setting ourselves up pretty much the same way. The other thing, on the legal front, the Koch brothers had advocated and lobbied and everything for the super PAC. It's called Citizens United. And it basically means that companies can now contribute to candidates as individuals. There's no cap to how much they can contribute to political campaigns. So we will be using the same tools and strategies and the things that they implemented for their benefit. We will be doing the same exact thing. We are just paying attention to what they are doing in the game, and we're going to copy them. No need to reinvent the wheel. There are people who have been oppressed here in America. There are people who are constantly denigrated by, you know, quote unquote, white supremacy, the system, and whatever else. Yet they do not use that as an excuse for why their people can't succeed, specifically the Asians and the Latino community and the Jewish community. So all we need to do is follow what these guys are doing, which is taking care of their own, especially in regards to economics and politics. And I believe that we will be okay. So that was a mouthful. If any of the guests want to comment on the nature of this organization, what it's about, we have some members on, so they can answer you with their own experience. And I am here, Brother Lou. I am here to answer any other questions that you have. I'll put the call mode into Q&A, and then you can press *6 if you have any questions or comments in regards to what it is that I just mentioned. Okay. No one has any questions. Okay. So I will bring the first topic to the floor. Just give me a second. So wait, who do we have? We have Brother Russ in the queue. Hold on, Brother Russ. Okay, brother.
How many members do you have now? And as a B corporation, would that mean if you get over 500, would you have to then be open to the public, like on the stock market or anything like that?
Well, the benefit of the membership now. I was looking at it earlier with Sister, had to help Sister Allison out with something. So we're at like 106. So this organization has launched this campaign, this initiative with the 2,000 members started in, I want to say, March. So we are at 106 now. Now, I have a lot of family and friends that have participated. We have two sisters here, Sister Barbara, Sister Bonnie. They are family members. And so we have a lot of people that, you know, spread the word and bring in people like that. In terms of the B Corp, we have our group core members, and that will be the formation of the board. But we need to have a certain group of participants in order for this to even make sense, because we have to qualify for the social aspect of it, where we can spend the money. So if you're familiar with how Tom's Shoes work, it's pretty much the same thing, but currently we aren't even generating the kind of revenue that would even, you know, qualify us to like show up on the radar. That's like one of the main things with what we're doing. I'm pretty much subsidizing this organization right now. You know, I started put up what was needed, and then from month to month, as we have server costs, we have advertising costs, outreach and things like that. I pretty much subsidize that. Because the goal is to use the organization's money to create the first, like I said, the first proof element, but it's actually the first business. And the first business, if you watch the blueprint, the first thing that we're going to launch is a shopping portal. And the shopping portal will allow even people who aren't members, it will allow them to come into the membership. I mean, we'll come in and basically support what we're doing without costing them any money. That's just, you know. Okay? Is that?
Okay, that yeah. I understand that.
Okay.
So I get that. But what I was asking was, I'm asking only because of tax purposes. That's why.
We're able to expense, but we don't have the revenue. We don't need to pay any taxes because everything is a loss right now. And then the good part of the B Corp is that you have to reach a certain standard of, you have to reach a certain level of revenue.
Okay.
And then you're able to expense off everything else. And we're nowhere close. We're nowhere close.
Right. I understand that. So. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Any other questions from anyone? Anyone else? Press star 6. Sister Kokoya, how you doing? Okay. Okay. So then I will bring the next topic to the floor. So what happened was, as I was going through and setting up some things on the site, most of you know that we had like a survey prior to coming on, you know, and asking, hey, do you want to work with a group of like-minded brothers, and sisters, so on and so forth. We have white people that come through that funnel as well. And I have a lot of, you know, I get a lot of messages. Well, not a lot, but I get, you know, each week I probably get maybe about 5 to 10 messages from white people saying, hey, how can we help? Hey, why is this only for black people? You know, things like that. I tell them that we're not against white people. We're not against white supporters. This is not a hate group. That's not what it's for. But I tell them that that the black community needs to learn how to run and operate a program or something for itself. Because every single time a program comes out for quote unquote minorities, it's used and better taken advantage of by those other minorities. So, like the women, and no offense to any women on it, but specifically white women, have been able to use this minority designation to their advantage. The Latino community and even the Jewish community. The Jewish community has been the best. They have executed the best on the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, the Constitution, amendments of the Constitution, because they studied it, had people that worked on it, and then they used it to their own advantage. And they used it to put certain laws and certain things in place. So my question to the group is, how do you think we should handle those people? I just had someone inbox me, a guy from Texas. He's saying, hey, what can I do to help, like, you guys somewhere in Texas or wherever you guys are? So I just want to know from the group, what do you guys think I should be saying or should be the reply? And do you guys think that we should actually even try to reach out to white people who are willing to help and, I guess, maybe use their white guilt and help that push our agenda? Is anyone opposed to that or whatever? So if you have a comment or a question or, you know, something in regard to that, press star 6 on your phone. Hey, Brother Donbo. Okay, hold on. Okay, Sister Barbara. Okay, Brother Donbo, you're first. Okay, go, brother.
How's it going?
Okay, hey, how you been, man?
I've been okay, hanging in there. I don't feel that, like you said, it's not a hate group. It ain't nothing special, but, I mean, it's Black Wallace now. It's for black people, for the black race. I don't feel that everything should have to include any other race or whatever just to make them feel great about themselves. I feel like this right here is an organization for black people. I feel like that's where we go wrong as black people, as a black race. We always let everybody else come in, and they come into our organization, so whatever we have going on, but we can't do the same thing to theirs or whatever. And I feel like when they do that or whatever, that gives them an upper hand, a reason to subjugate us or whatever, or create something of their own. So I feel like the less they know, the better it is for them, the better it is for us.
So the less they know, the better. All right, so we keep them completely in the dark.
Yes, I mean, because, I mean, they don't let us know. I mean, we can't walk up into a white supremacist group meeting or whatever and just say, hey, we want to know, we want to join, how can we help out? We don't like black niggas either. No, we can't say that. You know what I'm saying? We can't walk into their stuff. I mean, I feel like that's our problem. We always have made it so easy for everyone to walk into something that we have, but we can't walk into no other races, you know what I'm saying, organization, building, anything they got or whatever. If it's for their people, it's for their people. And I feel like that's our problem. We wear our feelings on our shoulders, on our sleeves, and we let everybody in so easy, trying to be nice and everything. And then look, we get in the long run. We get nothing. We get kicked.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That was my immediate response. That's why I'm bringing it to the group. I had some ideas, and I was saying, well, hey, you know what? If they want to, you know, contribute money, they want to contribute time and things like that.
I feel like this just to make them feel good sometimes, but it's like whenever I feel like somebody, you got a black organization trying to do something, you got somebody of another race, no one of another race has done something out the kindness of their heart. So with that being said, I look at it as, okay, who's trying to infiltrate what to see what's going on and what's being carried out? I don't trust people when it comes to something that they know that has nothing to do with them. And I feel like when somebody want to come be a part of something like that, and they're the total opposite, that's bad business to me. Not being a racist, but, you know, it just is what it is.
I hear you, brother. That was my knee-jerk reaction with some of the calls. The funny thing was, so I, like, actually started reading some comments, you know, that they were leaving, and some of them are saying things like, hey, you guys need, like, black nationalism. You guys need, like, to take care of, like, you know, try to figure out how to get a lot of your people off of social services and make them more productive and things like that. That's not harmful information. So that's why, and I started noticing. So, I mean, every now and then you will have some who say, wait, why are you guys being racist? You know, blah, blah, blah.
But I actually say, but when they say about, oh, they're trying to help our people get our social service, first of all, I don't feel like that us as black people, black men and black women, and them being white in the race, they don't even know what we go through, what our mentality state is to be on social services or to be on public assistance or whatever type of services we get from the government. They don't really understand that, and that's the problem. That's where it always goes into. They come in, they want to help out. The next thing you know, that's how they always say, they say, what's the people's quote? They say they divide and conquer, and that's how they do it. It depends on who's the strongest of the crew, who's the weakest of the crew, who they can sit up and subjugate amongst each other. And that goes into later on, what we're going to talk about later on, but I don't want to tell you no more. That's pretty much it. I'm done now.
All right, thank you, brother. All right. All right. All right. So we got Sister Barbara and Sister Bonnie in the queue. Sister Barbara? Hello?
I feel the same way he does. I do, 100% the same way he does. That's a way of them getting in, infiltrating, and then making a mess out of what we're trying to do. And then they turn around and say it's because we are too dumb or we too stupid or we too whatever to do stuff for ourselves. No. And then the other thing I wanted to address, like when you brought up that about social services, if you actually check, the majority of us are not on social services.
No, they are. It's them. Right, it is. It's right. Yeah, it is. It is them. But they, what they're saying is, all right, so the vast majority of them that are on it, though, it's like that farm. It's the farmers, too, right? So the SNAP program or whatever you want to call it, whatever it's called now, but welfare, basically, it's part of the agricultural thing. And so that's why there's a lot of them that are on it from that perspective. But they're receiving a different type of subsidy. You know, I guess when they're saying it to us, they're talking about, like, you know, housing, living in the project, and, you know, all of that stuff. But, okay, so.
Now, I have to disagree with that, too, and I'll tell you why. Because here where I am, There's a good million people in this city. And the majority of the people that are on, that you see in the social services office, are white and Hispanic, not black. Because we know how to handle not having. We know how to deal with that. We know how to live without and to manage with what we've got. We do. We've learned that the hard way because that's all we've ever known. They, on the other hand, if and put in that same position, they can't handle that. So, but my answer to that question about them being involved, I say definitely not, because I feel like the same way he does. They're just trying to infiltrate and then try and divide and conquer like they usually do. That's how they've gotten everything that they've gotten now. Divide and conquer. So I don't agree with it.
Okay. All right. All right. So we got Sister Bonnie, Sister Glenisha, and Brother Russell in the queue. All right. Thank you, Sister Barbara. Sister Bonnie, you are up.
I'm here.
Okay, Sister.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I am in total agreement with my sister and my brother. Absolutely not. If they want to donate some money to our cause, fine, we'll take your money. But as far as you being a part of what we are doing, no. Mm-mm. Because Barb's right. What my sister said is exactly right. What they do, and I've dealt with this week too, they will give you a false sense of commitment when they know that what they're doing is they're trying to infiltrate and they're trying to see what it is we're doing. They're going to do everything they can to throw a wrench in everything we do for our own people. But if they have their when they have their organizations and their stuff going on, we're not a part of it. They don't invite us to be a part of it. And we should not be inviting them. We need to do for ourselves and not allowing them to be a part of what we're doing. Now, if they want to donate some money to the cause, by all means, donate the money, and we are going to still use that money toward what we need to do for our people. But no. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sister. We got Sister Glenisha and Brother Russ in the queue. Sister?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Okay.
I totally agree with the brother and the sisters. First of all, white folks need to do what they need to do. If they want to help us, they need to help get some laws passed with their own people. We don't need your help over here. And I truly do feel like that because they don't do anything but cause destruction and pretty much everywhere they go. We know that by history. So if these white people with this white guilt or whatever you want to call it, they need to go to the Supreme Court like they do everything else and get laws passed to do everything they want to do else. So if white people really wanted this to end, it would have ended. The whole thing of white supremacy is to keep you oppressed. So what makes you think that this, you know, I'm sorry to say it, I know all white people are white supremacists, but, you know, they definitely benefit off the system of white supremacy. With the fact of that being said, why would they set you free? If they truly loved you and cared for you and felt some kind of way as a collective, then they would get some laws passed on our behalf. And you see, that's not happening. So, no, with that being said, they need to do their own thing. They don't need to march with us. We don't need to be holding no hands. I don't want to say no prayer. Take your tie behind over there and do what you need to do.
All right. Okay, so that's another it. No. All right, thank you, sister. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we got Brother Rush. Brother Rush.
All right, I just want to say that it's unanimous, and I agree with everyone that spoke earlier. And that goes back to my original question about, like, if you have more than 500 members, would you have to go public?
Right.
You see, because if you did, then anybody could just, you know, buy up and, you know, basically just take over the organization. So the way I think about it is we try to work with others during integration, and you see what happened to us.
Okay.
So I'm not talking about segregating, moving here, and only us are being here, but if we can keep this to ourselves, that's the best thing for us. Just like, you know, the Jews do it, the Chinese do it, because when the Jews make their money, they don't go to the Carver Bank on 125th Street in Harlem.
All right.
When the Koreans make their money, they don't go to the black-owned banks in Brooklyn. They don't put their money
there. Stay right there on Canal Street.
You see what I'm saying? But they take their money and they take it to where their people are going to take care of them. And that's all we have to do. There's nothing wrong with that. You shouldn't feel bad or feel a certain way about that. That's what people do. We're the only ones who don't. And so I agree. We should just do what everyone else does. That's it.
Oh, brother, to your point. All right, I heard what you said. Now, I didn't get your point when you were saying the 500 members would go public. Oh, right. No. So that's why it's structured like a member association. So the association can have as many members as it wants. It doesn't. That doesn't mean that it has to go in. So it's not like, you know, it's not like we're selling shares.
A company,
right. That's all right. So that, because I was saying, what do you mean going public? Right. No, it could remain a private entity, you know, a B corporation. But that's what it is. So we can have as many members as we want. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you for your feedback. Okay. And we have more. We have Sister Allison in the queue and Sister Barbara. Okay. Hold. All right. Thank you, Brother Russ. Appreciate it. Sister Allison. Hello,
hi,
sister.
Everyone.
Okay.
Hey. I just wanted to, you know, say that I agree with the consensus of everyone else that it should be kept amongst ourselves. And I don't think that, you know, bringing in other people would be a benefit to the group, especially with the startup phase. And I think other people do have their own motives. And a lot of the times if they start contributing, they'll want to have a voice. They'll want to, you know, have their input taken into consideration and actually implemented. And so I think it should just be amongst ourselves. I agree with the sister that said if they want to donate money, you know, donate money, but
money.
That's all that it is. There's nothing further that would come from it. You're just donating, like, to a charity, you know, so that's it. But that's my opinion. I just wanted to put that out there.
Okay. Thank you for not staying quiet, right? So I want to clarify, right? So they're not saying that they want to become members. So because I tell them explicitly that, okay, you know, it's not a white hate group, but it is a Black-only organization, and it's for the reasons that I had outlined earlier that, you know, we need to learn to operate and run our own thing. But I want to play devil's advocate for a moment. And Sister Barbara, I see you in the queue, and I'll get to you in a second. So let's think about it. So we're talking about forming a national organization of brothers and sisters all across. We know that there are different mindsets and, you know, different levels of consciousness and awareness and whatever it is in regards to our plight in America within our own community. So there are some people who are running around and just don't think that there's any problems at all. They're, you know, they're just focused on what's right in front of them. What I am saying to you is we don't have a lot of experience in organizing, especially in a meaningful and impactful way. The last person that I could recall, there were two people that I recall, but the most prominent person that organized us and actually put something together was Dr. Martin Luther King. And he was actually vilified and antagonized when he was alive. It was after he died that everyone just came together and said, oh, he was this. And Dr. King specifically, I mean, to me, from my research, he was the most impactful Black leader that we had. And that was because he left the civil rights and the voting rights bills on the books. Everyone else, then all of our other Black leaders, they just talk. That's all they did. They talked. They left us. So they left us with a fire in the belly. But they didn't really actually organize anything. The Nation of Islam, but that's something different, right? So I'm just saying, if we're trying to organize, let's just say in a community way, in the suburbs, every suburb pretty much takes care of itself. So they know how to run little communities. It's a science. We don't know how to do that. I mean, I wish somebody pointed out to me, show me where there are Black people that are running their city, their town, and everything effectively without contribution from white people or whatever. I don't see where. So I think that we should learn from people who know what they're doing. Even look at the Mexicans. They come to this country and they form these little communities. They do it immediately. It's instinctive. I don't understand, like, why we're not getting this. They come to this country. They can be from El Salvador. They can be from pick any place in South America. They will come to this country, and they will rally around where the rest of them are, somebody somewhere. They will open up a store. They will have the stuff that their people need. One of them will wind up buying a building or two or a couple of houses, and they'll live in there, and they'll fix their own cars, and I mean, it's crazy. So I'm, you know, playing devil's advocate, but I mean, I'm being honest. I think we need like a model we're going to need some help. We're going to need some outside help because we don't have any Black people to turn to that can help us really restructure this nation, and not even in Africa, because we can't even turn to any of those leaders, those dictators, those whatever you want to call them over there, presidents. We can't turn to them and say, hey, how do you run a Black nation? Because they're not doing a good job either. So, to be the most efficient, to make the most efficient use of our time, energy, and money, and to be the most effective, it would, you know, to my mind, it makes sense modeling someone or getting help from someone who has actually done it, as opposed to stumbling around and trying to figure it out and whatever else. So, I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate. That's something that I say. If anyone wants to weigh in or comment on that, press *6. We do have a few people in the queue. Sister Allison, do you want to say anything about that, or are you fine?
Yeah, I can agree with that part as far as getting a model and, you know, not having to recreate the wheel, so to speak.
Right.
I do agree with that aspect of it.
Okay. All right. So I'm not saying we let them in. I'm just saying maybe if they want to contribute, I'll definitely take the money, but also maybe allow some type of a consultation. So maybe they never actually get access to the whole group. Maybe there's a small group of us. We know what it is. We, you know, we're on our toes, right? So we have Brother Damba there, and he's like, nah, they're being racist. You know, I mean, just, you know, I'm just saying something like that, right? We have everyone who's attuned, and we're just grabbing the jewels that we need so that we can take them back and be like, okay, cool, listen, guys, this is what we need to be doing. I'm just saying, like, something like that. So, all right, so we have Sister Barbara, Sister Bonnie, and Brother Damba in the queue. Sister Allison, is there anything else you want to contribute in summary, or you're fine?
Oh, I'm fine.
Okay, cool. Sister Barbara.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. As far as what you just brought up, I think that, yeah, we need a model, but how come we cannot use the model that Dr. King set out there with civil rights? We may have to tweak it.
But it's so towards the end of his life, he began moving towards a more economic. He began moving more towards the economic. So a few things happened. We're in a really unique position right now where we have economic freedom and political freedom. We didn't have that at the time when he was doing what he was doing. So he fought,
right.
He had the civil rights, he had all of this stuff. But what happened immediately thereafter, affirmative action was implemented. And then that allowed us the economic springboard that we needed, especially in regards to, like, the integration. So Brother Ruck said, you know, look at what integration, look what happened to us and blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm saying, yeah, integration allowed more of us to get more money. Integration allowed more of us to get more skills, right? So we have a skill set. A lot of us have a skill set that would not be afforded to us unless integration was possible, unless affirmative action was possible. So, like I said, there really isn't a model. There really is, and I take that back. I'm sorry because I didn't even get to that point because I was trying to be respectful of of the time. There was a brother named Lee. Oh shoot, man. Oh God, I just had it on the top of my tongue. But he was out of Philly. Was a brother out of Philly, Leon Sullivan. His name was Leon Sullivan, and he had. And I studied this prior to launching Black Wallace Matter. He has this thing. It's called OIC. It exists to this day. He started it back in the 60s. He started it back at the time with Martin Luther King and Adam Clayton Powell and all those other guys. And he was like, listen, you guys can sit here, argue back and forth with these white folks. I'm not doing that. My people need me in my community. He was a pastor. He went there and he started creating jobs and training and pretty much everything that we're talking about. We had this concept that we needed to address the whole man or the whole woman. So he had like these feeder classes that would have black people come in off the street and tell them about personal hygiene, and he would help them get a GED, a general equivalency diploma, and he would help them do all these other different things before he actually sent them and then before he actually trained them to go into the workforce. And then what he did was, because he set it up that way, he liaised with white people, because they had the jobs, they had the big industry. And he had our people working, like, creating seat belts and harnesses and things for NASA. You understand what I'm saying? He right now, his organization still exists. They are going into the hospitality industry. They are training people to become chefs. They are training people to do housekeeping. They're training people to do all these other different things because these are massive industries. And I studied OIC prior to launching what it is that we were talking about, because I was looking for something that actually works. So he's the only person that – the only black person that could basically – you know, that could that we could basically look to, but the only thing is his thing was specifically focused on the job training aspect, and, you know, and so that was in the 60s, but see, now we're dealing with a whole lot of other problems. So we're dealing with, you know, poverty, we're dealing with, single mothers, and we're dealing with, you know, police violence, and we're dealing with a lot of other crazy things that he didn't True. Necessarily attempt to address. And so, you know, that is just something I wanted to bring to the group. We have.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But so, here's another thing that I wanted to ask. If not that, we had Black Wall Street in Tulsa. We know what happened to it. But they had to have had some kind of model. They had to have, in order to build themselves up like they did.
Yeah, the guy who started it was working for a white guy. He came from someplace else. He made money. Black Wall Street is, see, a lot of people keep saying we have Black Wall Street. I mean, we had recent Black Wall Street. We had Harlem. We had Bed-Stuy. We had black meccas that were way bigger than Black Wall Street ever was. And we're losing them right now to this day. So it's not that, that's what I'm trying to explain. Like, everybody's saying, oh, the Black Wall Street.
Okay.
Even at the time when Tulsa, Oklahoma, even when they had Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they had a prosperous black area in St. Louis. And then we all know what was going on in Harlem. Harlem is the black mecca. Harlem is the renaissance for this whole country. It is the cultural renaissance. It's not just black people, for this whole country. So, I mean, what could be more? Brother Russ can tell you, he's from uptown. He knows all those streets. Those streets are named after every black person. The businesses back in the day, they were all owned by black people. Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, from where I'm from, the whole style was all black. The whole style, go down Fulton, it's all black businesses on every side, except for they had a Pathmark. They had the Restoration. They had the slave theater. Well, it was back then. But I mean, we had our own, and we lost it. And that's because there was no model to take it to, like, a black city where, like it's all ran by, like, black people. I forgot the guy in Atlanta. Oh man, the mayor in Atlanta. That's the guy who became the first black guy who became the mayor. When he got in there, everyone was like, yeah, this is what we're going to do in Atlanta, da 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 da. They wasn't expecting him to work with white people to do the things that he was doing, but he had to.
So, right.
We got a few more people in the queue, sister, so I guess this is a hot topic. So we got Sister Bonnie, Brother Domba, and Brother Russ. Is there anything else you want to add in closing?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, all right. And if you do, just press star 6 and get back in the queue. All right.
All right.
Sister Bonnie?
Yes.
Hello?
Can you hear me? I'm here.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Now, I'm going to back you up just a little bit. I haven't researched this out yet, but I'm going to. There is a city in Texas that is predominantly black. It's DeSoto, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the businesses in this city are black owned, black operated. It is a city. It's like a suburb of Dallas, but it is a city. And it is a black area. It's to a point where people move into the area and they're looking for homes. They won't, the real estate brokers will not take white people to the that area. And it's a nice area. It's not, you know, it's not a slum. It's a nice area. And most of the people are black professionals. They have their own schools, their own stores, their own everything. Right there. And we might want to look into what it is they're doing in DeSoto, because DeSoto is growing. It's a growing area.
They are attracting you said black professionals, but I mean we have that in New York. I mean, that's so a black area. I mean, you got Detroit, you got Philly, you got Atlanta. We have quote unquote black cities, but their government, I bet you their government is not all, I mean, they're in Texas. Texas is a Republican state. They have a white governor. Their sheriff is probably white. Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I can find out.
Like I said, I haven't had an opportunity to research it, but I'm going to find out who exactly is running DeSoto, Texas.
Okay.
Who is running?
Okay.
But what I've understood so far, it is black run and owned. That whole city is black run and owned. There's maybe 30% of the people in DeSoto are white, maybe, if that.
Okay.
If that.
Listen, it'll be a great find out. But I mean, like I said, my point is they're in the state of Texas. Their governor is whoever the guy is, but he's a Republican, and he's a white guy.
Yeah.
There's only but so much that they are going to do within DeSoto, Texas. Again, so like if you take certain areas of Brooklyn, the congressmen and the Senate, the assemblymen, and all of that, they're black too. I mean, it's a lot. I forgot who I was talking to. I was talking to somebody the other day. And I told him, I said, New York City is a black ran city. The majority of the city jobs, those are black people. So it's not like we're not seeing it. And then this is one of the things too, why you see like people from New York, they kind of have like a disconnect when they talk about racism with other ethnicities, because even though the cost of living is high in New York, the living is good. Like, you can live your whole life in New York, never leave, and, like, enjoy pretty much everything. Or almost, I mean, even wide open spaces, like, you can go to Long Island if you want like that. But for the most part, every single thing that you could possibly want, you could do that in that city, and you can constantly see black faces. You can see black screw faces, or you can see black happy faces. You can see black professional faces. You can see black blue-collar faces. It's like that's how it is. But the bottom line is, and we even had a black mayor, Mayor Dinkins. We even had a black president in this country. But that doesn't – what we need are – we need – like the middle of this country is ran by – like the middle of this country is suburbia, the whole rest of it outside of cities. And all of these little suburban areas, well, most of them – some way, somehow, they have figured out how to pay their utilities. They have figured out how to exist on the taxes that they collect. They have figured out how to do their town halls. They have figured out how to pay for schools for their thing and basically get a good quality of life. They have figured that out, and that's what we want to replicate. We want to replicate that across the country because that's what we need, and hopefully maybe we could create additional DeSotos. Tell black folks, hey, you live in Atlanta? Hey, move outside of Atlanta somewhere. I don't know where. I'm not really too familiar with, you know, what's going on in Georgia. But let's say you move to Savannah or one of those other places, and, hey, here's a black enclave, and you can, you know, it's good schools, and it's this, and it's that, and it's that. What you're going to find, though, is you're going to find upwardly mobile black folks that do that. And so you're still going to have the problems in the inner city because the people that are living there don't have the vision. They may not have the financial ability to move, or they may not have the skill set and things like that. And so when you have that problem, that pulls down, that drags down on us all. That weighs us all down. And that's the problem. That's what we're trying to address, right? Because the Asians, right? You don't see, there's not a mark against the Asian community. There's no mark against the Latino community. There's no, you understand what I'm saying? Like in the general scope, we don't immediately look at a young Latino guy or a young Asian guy and immediately think thug or kill him or, you know, something crazy like that. And basically what we're talking about are our babies. We're talking about our sons. You know, and I have a son. So that's what's important, at least to me, in the way that I'm thinking about this. But we have other people. We have other people in the queue system. I'm sorry, I went long. Do you have anything else you want to say in conclusion?
Well, there's one other thing too, because I don't know how they did it, but it's not a black city now, but it was, and it was run by. It was, everything was run by the blacks. And this was in Wilmington, North Carolina, until the white folks decided that they was going to go in there and they was going to overthrow. And they literally went in there and overthrew that black government. Literally. There's a movie coming out about this called Wilmington on Fire. And that's a history lesson. But that was a Wilmington, North Carolina was a black city that was owned, ran, everything was done by blacks. The government was black, everything. Now, I don't know what the deal was with the governor and all of that in North Carolina at the time, because this happened like 1908 when all of this took place. But I'd like to find out what their model was, because they did run absolutely everything. We ran it.
All right. Well, research it and please get back to us, definitely.
Okay.
All right. All right, thank you, sister. Okay, thank you. Brother Domba, Brother Russ, and Sister Glenisha in the queue. Brother Domba? Hold on. Yes, brother. Oh, wait a minute. What's going on here?
I got to go all the way back to where you
first started.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, you can, brother.
All right, I want to go all the way back to where you first started. Now, I think we do have intelligent black people in this country to get the job done alone, you know, and I feel like with this new day and age, we have resources now with the knowledge to get the job done. I think it's impossible to use an old model, you know what I'm saying, you know, to get something done now in this new day and age. I think it requires something with some new tactics, you know what I'm saying, a new model, something that's created fresh, because what was going on back in the early 1900s and 50s and 60s is not going on in 2017. It may repeat itself, but everything is done a little bit more different. Now, I feel modeling behind King, mixing it up, I don't know, you know what I'm saying, because me personally, I feel what made him famous wasn't his speech. It was what him getting shot was made him famous. Now, we can run into something by ourselves, you know what I'm saying? We can run any type of organization, program, or business by ourselves. I mean, we are smart, gifted black people, you know, but a lot of times we're never given a chance, you know what I'm saying, to see what we can really do, because all we do is, once again, we let the white man come in. He can take it by force, or then they buy their way in. And then once they do that, we in this world, we can choose to make anything we want happen in this world, you know what I'm saying? But only time things go haywire is when we add the enemy in. The enemy can be black, the enemy can be white, it can be Asian as well, because like you already know how I feel. It was a lot of us came off the plantation with each other, so we don't know who to trust. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, doing a model of Martin Luther King, whatever, is not going to really get it nowhere, whatever, because we're dealing with a whole lot of different type of people in this day and age or whatever. And I think creating a new model of our own, something that's going to sit up here and lift it, or what we know how to, what works for today. Because with me, I'm a very intelligent, very good, a very grown black man. I got my own, you know, and the thing is everything I got or whatever, everybody else has to get from the white man. I don't. And I just feel like that. I think with my mentality and how I model my life and to get the things that I got, you know, I feel like that I think every black person can tap in on it if they knew how, you know what I'm saying, or was told how. And I think we can come up with a model of our own that works best for us, because I don't feel like that we have to sit up here and bring in a white man to sit up here and help get something done, because I think I'm just as smart as them as not smarter. Actually, I do think I'm smarter than them.
Well, to clarify, I didn't say we need to model Martin Luther King. I was saying that.
No, I mean model like him. I mean model like him. I ain't said per se exactly like
no,
him.
No, but what I was saying in terms of, like, so he didn't get a chance to execute his economic plan. So I'm not saying that we need to model him. What I had said, and I don't know if, you know, if I miscommunicated it, but what I am saying is he attacked substantial issues. He attacked civil rights and voting rights. Those are on the books. Those things have some meat in them, right?
Yeah,
and so that's, and so what I'm saying is this organization is focused on economics and politics, because I feel that those things are substantial. Those are the things that are going to cause us to make change, or cause us to create change in the community. But now, since we have that complete package, that complete model, political and economic, and also a social component, we have no model. And so then that's when I brought in the gentleman, Leon Sullivan, because he provided, it was social slash, so it was a social thing, but because it was a job training program. So I used those two guys, Martin Luther King and Leon Sullivan, to say how we, you know, as basically to propose a composite, you know, so we can take Leon Sullivan's social program in terms of the job training program, and we can take Martin Luther King's his implementation of the political and the civil rights aspect. But what I was saying is that we don't have any one person who has done both in the black community or as to look at. Now, I hear what you're saying. You're saying black people are gifted and intelligent and deep and these things like that. I am not disagreeing with you, but what I am telling you as an intelligent, gifted black brother myself, I am telling you it is so much easier when you have someone who can show you how to do it as opposed to stumbling around trying to do it on your own. It is very frustrating, and it wears you down, and sometimes it makes you give up. And that's
okay,
exactly
but this is the question, though. Are these white people going to show us at what cost, though? Because I think
I just brought the thing to the floor because we have so since we have started, so we've had thousands of people come to our website. We've had thousands of people go through the survey. I'm looking at the numbers, and then there are about 200. There are 200 responses and replies from white people. And again, like I said, I get contacted, I get a message or email or whatever it is from white people during the week. And over the past holiday, I was thinking, I'll say, you know what, maybe, because I'm the type of person who likes to look at what is and use all available resources. I say, you know what, man, maybe we need to be looking at a way to take advantage of this white guilt, or at the very least, take money from them, or even in addition to that, let's say we're trying to set up a training program. Let's say we're trying to organize an effective boycott. Let's say we're trying to do, you know, rally political people or whatever it is, you know, rally people in a particular geographical location for political purposes. It's like, okay, cool. Well, white people do this all the time. They do this stuff all the time. You piss them off. We don't even hear about this stuff. I mean, I do because I'm watching them. They just got pissed off with Target. They got pissed off with Target with this transgender bathroom thing last year or whenever this thing happened. Target lost $15, $16 billion because they was like, oh, really, Target? That's what you want to do? Guess what? We're not going to your stores anymore. Target had to fire their top five executives, everyone under the CEO. So everyone else, the COO, CTO, and everybody else, director of marketing, everybody else got fired, not to mention thousands, I mean, hundreds of middle management people. Kellogg's, another company, they piss white people off. There's a few people who are on the call who, you know, I talk behind the scenes. I'm in a Republican area, or Mainway. the big box of cereal that costs maybe $5, $4, $5, $6 where you live costs like a dollar and some change where I'm at, and they have pallets of it. These people will not buy Kellogg's product. They will not buy. I go in there and grab some freaking Apple Jacks and whatever it is and some Frosted Flakes for my kids. I get the side eye. I'm like, man, you crazy, cereal was on sale. I'm grabbing it. I didn't know that, hey, these white people, it's the reason why these pilots are sitting there. These white people, they're not buying because Kellogg's pissed them off. That is something that we need to learn. The Asian community, they dragged that little Asian dude off the freaking plane. The company lost $800 million that same week. That same week, they lost $800 million in value. They didn't send out no SOS. There wasn't no massive Asian email or text message or whatever going on. They just knew. They just immediately stepped to their business. And our people need to do that first. But I think the first thing is we need to see that we have some kind of power. And I mean, aside from Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, I mean, Mega Evers and, you know, Marcus Garvey and all these other people, we did not have anyone who knew how to galvanize the people. Take this call for Black Wallets Matter, for instance. Our first month, we had 7,200 people come through the website. We had thousands of people come through the site each week. We have hundreds that come through the same survey that many of you come through. Hey, do you want to work with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters? Yes. Hey, do you want – all right, so, you know, we'll if you want to receive a text when we have the town hall meeting, we'll do that. If you want an email, we'll send you an email. You have people say, okay, cool. They have contact. I have people behind the scenes, so when I send out the notifications for the town hall meeting, I have people hit me back. What's this about? What are you contacting me for? Why did I receive this email? You know, things like that. I don't understand. I don't understand. When it's time to rally the troops, when things happen in our community, I send out the email, we put it on the Facebook page. Unless it's something ratchet, unless it's something silly, we get no engagement. We get no engagement. I made a video where I went, there's a thing called slaveships.org or slavevoyages.org. We have some people, believe it or not, we have some people in the black community that are saying slavery was a myth. That is what they are saying. They are saying slavery didn't happen. We were already here. The Europeans came. They took us, went around like on a, I guess, took us on a cruise and then brought us back. I don't even know how these people are thinking it. I went and put together this video. It went through the logs. It shows the dots for how many people, how many slaves were on each voyage, where they were going, and all of that. I mean, you still get people debating, nah, we were already here. What are you talking about? They are showing logs from the Brit. These are British ship logs. The British Empire was the strongest empire back in the 14, 15, 1600s, they patrolled the sea. They had the biggest navy. They were intercepting the Portuguese and the Spaniards and all these other people, the people who were actually bringing ships. They have logs. I am showing a log, a book of a guy who was a slave trader. And he is saying, I brought this woman and I brought her kid for XYZ. And we still have our brothers and sisters who are saying, nah, this didn't exist. So I'm just saying, white people, with our consent or not, have figured out some way to manipulate, shape, and whatever it is, and oppress us. Asians and Arabs, they have figured out ways to infiltrate our neighborhoods and take our money, suck us dry without our consent. They didn't ask us could they set up shop. They just came and they did it. So all I'm saying is that other ethnic groups, other people outside of black people, they have a plan. They have a formula. They got some way, somehow, that they know how to work, that they know what to do. And I don't know if that thing is just all of them, they all get together behind our back and say, hey, let's target these people. I don't know what it is. And I seriously doubt it is, because look at the white people targeting the Arabs now, right? But so I'm just saying, whatever it is, we need to find out what that formula is. And that is, that same thing needs to be implemented. I don't know where there's a black person that has done that in recent times. I don't know where we're going to look. And I am telling you, trying to figure it out is frustrating and expensive. It's frustrating, and it's going to take us longer than it is. Even with a solid plan, where it's still this thing is probably going to take 20, 30 years. And we may and we may just be able to see, like, the beginning stages of it. It needs to be in the mindset of our children that, hey, you know what? I'm going back to I'm black and I'm proud. And you know what? Being black means I don't show my ass in public. I don't do this on social media. I don't kill my brother. I don't disrespect my woman. I don't disrespect my parents. I help my brother if I had. He doesn't pull me down. You know, that kind of thing, like how it was when I was growing up in the 70s and the 80s. That's what I think it needs to go back to, because crack came in and decimated everything in the 90s. Oh, well, in the mid 80s to the 90s, crack came in and just destroyed. Well, I'm sorry, brother. I am running really long. I am passionate about this subject, as you can tell. We have two more people in the queue, Brother Damba.
Go ahead.
I want to get to the people that's in the queue. I'm sorry. I want them to weigh in as well. I'm sorry for that, brother. Okay. And if you have anything else to add, just press star 6 and get back in the queue. All right?
Go ahead. Okay.
Okay. Brother Rush and Sister Glenisha, you're next. All right. Go ahead, brother.
Okay. How you doing? Well, first, I just want to start off by saying the reason that other races can come in and be successful is because they were not taught to hate and distrust themselves. We were. We were made to think that. Okay? That's where all the problems stem from. Because, like I said, I had the same idea, and even me, I'm hesitant with giving my money, but, you know, I'm going to. Because it's like, just because it's not my idea or my organization doesn't mean he's not being authentic. So I'm going to, right? Now, the best model for any business is a household. If you know that, all households is the head, and then everybody else follows. Now, people don't like him, but if you notice, I'm just using him as an example. Donald Trump has the most problem being the president because he can't run it like he runs his businesses. Because he's used to being the authoritarian figure.
Yep. And that's what he thought he was going to do.
That's how you build businesses. That's how you build communities. That's how you build all type of things for your culture. That's how it works. Because believe you me, everybody that's in the suburb, there's somebody that they have to answer to. Like, they elect a mayor, but that mayor, he can stick the police on them. So they still fall back in line, no matter how much they dislike the mayor or something. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, now, listen. What they do though, white people, and we've all seen it. I mean, I see it actually out here. I'm in the suburb. They have their town hall. If the mayor says something or does something that they don't like, we had those speed cameras, those red light cameras.
Right.
We had red light cameras in the main intersection of this town. And those people were down at, this is some bullshit. I won't freaking stand for it. It's unfair. I'm traveling with my kids. I don't care about this. You don't need to raise more money. My taxes are high. Yo, I have never, ever, ever seen this. Those red light cameras are gone. Those red light cameras are gone. They told the mayor, they told him specifically in no uncertain terms, what's this guy's name? I think it's Vincent or whatever the hell it is, right? Whoever this guy is out here, I'm in the suburbs, right? They told him in no uncertain terms, you either take care of this shit or you won't be in on the next term. They told him that's how they did. I'm incensed, and they know that they will vote. They understand the power of the vote. The other thing,
Brother Lou,
like you said,
Brother Lou, voting is important, and I'm not going to say it's not. It's important, but you know what's more important than voting? The dollars
your
that
money.
He donate to his campaign. So that's what it is. So once you learn how to control your money and control your own personal spending, then you can control who gets it. See, that's what our people don't have a problem with. Our people have a problem with controlling our own impulses, our own feelings about everything. If you notice, we can get emotional about anything at any time with anyone. Because he who controls you, he who angers you controls you. And anybody can piss us off at any time. Once you learn how to master yourself and master not being able to be controlled by anyone, they don't know how to deal with you because you are your own master. But anyway, that's an Islam thing, I self Lord and Master. But anyway, I'm going to get back to what you were talking about. Trade, like what you were talking about, the brother in Philadelphia with the training. Brothers and sisters need to learn different trades. Like everybody wants to make money, but nobody knows how. It's real simple. If you know how to paint, you have a business. If you like to paint, you can, whenever somebody builds a house, you can hand out your cards and all that. So all you have to do is learn how to trade. It's very simple. We just are hesitant and fearful because we're constantly rejected. So that's what, but once you learn how to do a trade, it's very simple. You can do that. Now, when it comes to the number one thing that we need, it's property. When I say property, see, you know how you have everything set up on the web, and, you know, some people can come, some people can't. If you were, the reason that all the buildings, I mean, all the businesses on 125th, like you were talking about earlier, and in Brooklyn are gone, is because they had to pay rent to whoever owned that land. You understand what I'm saying? Remember when I don't know if you remember, but Giuliani came in and made all the street vendors move. Why? Because the street is public property. Mm-hmm. So that's how the mayor was able to get rid of them. If they had their own place where they didn't have to pay rent and the landlord couldn't raise their rent, they could still be there. You understand what I'm saying?
I don't know what happened on 25th, but I know in Brooklyn, I know in the South now, man, the black people own those buildings. They own those buildings. They own those properties. You would have the old lady. She would have two or three brownstones, and she would have a store. She would have a mixed use store. And at the time when I grew up, and the time that I'm talking about, black people owned those businesses. They owned those businesses, and they owned those buildings. What happened was the Jewish people up the hill on Eastern Parkway in their little community, they done figured out. Like, I don't even know I still don't know how you can buy a property at market value and then still increase it and do whatever. The first thing that happened in Brooklyn, the Jews started buying up everything. And then now whatever the reason is, I'm just saying, like, they figured out a way. They weren't lowballing these people. They weren't lowballing them. Right. So I don't know how they made money.
They sold. What they did was they bought out the old people, the old owners. The old owners are like, they ran up and basically gained them. You don't want this. Nobody wants to take your business anymore. Your kids don't want it. Listen to that.
Yep.
We'll pay you this, buy you out, and you can move out. Right? And then what happened? The buildings become abandoned. Crime takes over. The property values go down. They own it. Because the Jews never sold it. They'll own it,
right.
And then after they clean it up, they move. They just decide to move up everybody in. That's what gentrification is.
I know. I'm watching it.
That's all they did.
I'm watching.
Right? Yeah. But what the lady said, yes, like I told her, I lived in Texas for 8 years. So, yes, ma'am, I forgot your name, sister, but it is DeSoto, Texas. It was DeSoto, Texas, and it's like 64% black. Most of the businesses are black owned, but however, like Brother Lou said, it is a Republican state, a Republican city, because it's a suburb of Dallas, and it's surrounded by many other races that do not want to allow it to do well. Now, when earlier you said something about how we need a model, we don't know how. I just want to say this to you that. If you look at the 1800s, the late 1800s, right after the slavery was abolished, unions started popping up. And the reason unions started popping up was because ex-slaves did all the jobs that white people would do. Now, that was the class fight that they had. White people, poor white people would make more than ex-slaves. So the reason unions formed was they wanted to make sure they kept making more than ex-slaves, because if the company owners wouldn't hire the union members because they want, I mean, the white man because they wanted too much money, they give it to an ex-slave, and they do the work for however little penny they get. That's where sharecropping came in. You understand? So the reason unions and all that existed was because they tried. That's why it was so hard for black men to get into unions, because they didn't want black men or women. Back then, women didn't really work, but they didn't want black men in those unions, because then they'd have legal representation to fight for them, and also they'd be in. I'm in a union now. I'm one of the few black men that's still in my union at a hotel. I work in the hospitality industry, so I can tell you all everything about it. I've been doing this for 13 years. At the front desk, so I know about it. The problem with us is real simple. We are too fascinated with the now. We do not think about the future at all. Everybody is ready for the now because they want their time to shine, and we all deserve our time to shine, but sometimes you have to step back and just say, maybe it's not for me. But everybody wants their time to shine, including me. I want my time, but I have to step back. I look at the kids out here, and they have the fact that fathers and mothers aren't together is bad, but the fact that fathers and mothers don't know how to be fathers and mothers is worse. These kids don't know anything because their parents don't know anything, and that's the problem. My aunt and I were talking about this earlier. The problem is, how do you teach somebody something that you don't know? You understand what I'm saying?
Yep, I agree. I was actually going to address that, but you came around full circle. That is exactly what are the main issues, and that's what I was trying to say. So we don't know how to run a nation. We don't know how to rally our troops. We don't know how to do that. So how are we going to do something we don't know? We have to look at people who've done this to us, whether they've done this to us for nefarious purposes or what. The fact is, they don't care whether you're a positive brother, a positive sister, negative brother, negative sister. They're going to get your money some way, somehow. They're going to use your votes against you, or your lack of voting, or whatever it is. They're going to use that to their benefit. And so all I'm trying to do is say, listen, Sister Allison, or maybe it was Sister Glenisha, that said this earlier. I was saying that not all of them may be racist, but they do benefit from white supremacy.
Right.
Right.
I remember
they
that.
Do. So what happens is, if we catch a few of them who are careless enough to drop the jewel or tell us how it works on the inside, right, we should be smart enough to pick up the jewels and freaking take advantage. That's how I personally feel.
But we have the jewels. We can do it. We just have to put it in action. That's all we have
right,
to do.
Right, but putting it in, knowing something and implementing it is a way other skill set, bro. And, I mean, I don't know what you have ever tried to implement or do. I'm a lifelong entrepreneur, right? So
okay.
I had a job for like a week in my life, like one real
okay.
job, a week in my life. I'm 42 years old. I've been a business owner, operator, whatever it is, my whole
uh-huh.
adult life, and even when I was a child. To come up with an idea and then to go and actually implement that idea is way different from sitting there at home and intellectualizing and writing out how you're going to do it on a piece of paper. It is
uh-huh.
very, very hard, because there's always going to be an X factor.
Right.
If someone who already has had experience, who has already traveled that road, are you familiar with what a Sherpa is? Like a Sherpa.
No.
Sherpa?
What is that?
Like, okay, so it's like a guy, like if you're going to go climb, the Mount Kilimanjaro
Mount
or whatever it is.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Mount Everest or whatever. You're going to have what is called a Sherpa. It's someone who can help you from guidepost to guidepost because he has already done it. That's kind of sort of what we need. So I'm looking at it from a perspective of looking at other black people who have been successful in the things that they have done, and I have intellectualized it and I have mapped it out and it is in the blueprint. But one of the other things that, you know, that I'm saying is if we truly want this to be a national thing, if we want this to permeate every inner city and every suburb and whatever else it is, we need to find some way to communicate or sound the alarm or to bring the awareness to our brothers and sisters. And all I can say is that no matter whatever you want to say about white people, they got every, the powers that be has every single person on this soil, black, white, brown, whatever you are, they have you marching to the beat of their drum. They got the formula. They know what they're doing. The Asians, despite marching to the beat of the drum of the powers that be in America, the Asians have figured out a way to get their own coins. And the Latinos have figured it out, and the Jews, and even in larger white communities, you'll see that Italians break away from Polish people and things like that, yet they still come together for the common good. The Irish, the Italians, and the Polish, like I see in my area. When we go to a school event, you got like the black people over here, you got the Italian people over there, you got the Polish people, and you got the Irish people, right? But they all come together because, hey, look, it's the kids. But then when it's a softball or when it's a basketball, you'll see them rooting for their own. You know, the Italian guys, they're rooting for Ginobili, and the Italian people, I mean, the Polish people are rooting for Glenn Becky, and, you know, the Irish people are voting for Kennedy. Like, I mean, rooting for Kennedy. Like, they, I mean, it's there. I see it. I'm you know, and I'm like, well, you know what? They all root for the black kids, though, because the black kids are usually the ones that scoring all
the best,
on the team. Right, yeah, so I'm just, you know, just to let everybody know. But listen, we have Sister Glenisha in the queue. We've been going on. Right, brother. Thank you for contributing. Okay, Sister Glenisha, you're up. Brother Cujo, how you doing? Hold on, Sister Glenisha, let me... Your mic is hot. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes?
I wanted to say, I wanted to go back to, first of all, let me say I'm from Dallas, Texas. Okay. And I'm probably like maybe 20 minutes away from DeSoto. DeSoto is pretty much Black Wall Street, if you want to say. It's lots of black people. Black businesses are thriving, and for the most part, there a lot of there's some brown people that are in there, but for the most part, it's majority black. So I just wanted to state that, me being from Dallas, in Dallas area, that is true. Also, I want to discuss there was a person before MLK that gave us a map. And his name was Marcus Mosiah Garvey. He gave us a map. He told us what to do. And we know that, you know, the powers that be deported him back. But he did give us a blueprint on what to do, what we should do, and we were doing that. And a brother from Jamaica, was born in Jamaica. Also, I wanted to speak on black people need, in order for us to do this as a collective, we should start, black people, a lot, we're not really known for traveling. And I mean traveling to the motherland, not traveling to, you know, Greece or whatever the case may be. But, you know, us going to Africa and actually getting allies, other African allies. So when some stuff does go down in here or, we build our communities and something happens, you know, that we're able to have an ally. And because this is the thing, white supremacy has taught black people that were born here in America and black people that were black people in Africa that we're supposed to not like one another, that they don't like us. And that is so far from the truth. We have so many allies that we can have. We got Africa, we got Honduras, we got there's so many melanated people on the planet. That's why you have white supremacy, because there's only a few of them. So with that being said, I think we should be able to reach out and talk to some of our brothers and sisters and not let those stereotypes and those lies that white supremacy has made up, that supposedly the African male female do not like the American black female or male. that is nothing but lies to keep us separated. That's it.
Well, okay, so to your point, I wholeheartedly agree. I wholeheartedly agree that we need to reach out to and we need to have allies and things like that. But the question is, who, what representative body do they talk to? Who is our ambassador? Who speaks for us? See, so because we don't have that, and that's like the first step that's needed, right? So in order to be an ally for someone, you have to have some kind of power. And they need to be able to. So let's say something jumps off with us. Realistically speaking, what is? Africa is a continent. It's not even so. So really, it needs to be what country in Africa? But Honduras, right? And Venezuela or Brazil, right? Like realistically speaking, what are they going to do? What are they going to be able to do? They can't do anything. They can't do anything because they don't even know when to help us. And one of the main things that I said earlier, where, you know, you get the behavior of some of us that pulls us down, when people outside of this country look at the things that happen that happen within our black community, that turns them off. And that's why, so you said, you know, that's far from the truth with the Africans and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm, you know, from New York, if you go uptown, man, you'll see those African dudes, they don't identify with you like you're, you know, like you're, like their brother, like that. They'll call you brother, but that's not what the vibe is, because they are like, you guys are crazy. What is wrong with you guys? And that's across the globe. I have a brother from UK. He called me the other day, and he was like, I like what you guys are doing. He said, because, man, we get some things, we see some of the things that you guys have going on in the black community on the telly, and it's like, what the hell is going on over there? And they think that it's like everybody is on crack and the women are this, and, you know, that's what they think. They think that's stereotypical thing, and they don't understand that there are pockets of us and different, you know, there's just differences. So prior to putting something together like what you're talking about, we would need, plug ourselves, we would need an organization like Black Wallets Matter to represent the collective, to represent the mindset of the collective. And that's why, you know, we focus on, we're just like, listen, if you wake up in the morning and you see a black or brown face or whatever it is, and you look out your window and you see problems, or you think, or you know that there are problems in the community, and you're saying that something needs to be done, that's all we need for you to qualify. We can't get into the little details because there are so many different variables. We will never agree on anything. But so if we say that this organization is about helping people in, you know, people of color that are in whatever, and helping them economically, politically, until we get really, really big, almost to the point where it can't be stopped, we're not going to experience too much blowback, because the common white person, they're getting kicked in the nuts right now. I don't know if you guys have your finger on the pulse of what's going on here in America, but the regular white people are fighting amongst themselves. Like it's like on the verge of a civil war right now. They are really, really upset with each other because of this thing that's going on with Trump. It's like our brother Russ said, Trump got in there. He was like, all right, cool. I'm going to just take this over and I'm going to fix everything because I'm going to do it, you know, using the efficiencies and the processes that I use in my business. And then he's finding out that bureaucratic red tape is real. And he's being stymied. So his supporters are like, okay, cool, yeah, yeah, yeah. But hey, what's going on with the bureaucratic red tape? And then the people who are blocking him, they're like, oh, he's still doing this, he's still doing this, and not even realize it, and it becomes like a stalemate. My thing, and everyone who speaks to me behind the scene, and I've said it a few times on these town hall meetings, what black people need to be doing right now is we need to be minding our business. We need to be letting these white people fight amongst themselves. We need to let the violence, the civil war, we need to stand back, and when the smoke clears, we need to have our shit together. That's realistically what we need. We don't need to be worrying about Muslim bans. We don't need to be running over there to no airports. We don't need to be talking about protecting some borders or not protecting borders. We don't need to even be concerning ourselves about none of that stuff. We need to be figuring out how to get to our babies. We need to be figuring out how to employ more of our brothers and sisters. Like the brother Rush said, we need to be providing skills and training to them. We need to become a valuable asset. And then once we become a valuable asset with some degree of power, some degree of influence, now we can reach out to Venezuela or Brazil or, you know, whatever country, Nigeria, Ghana, whoever in Africa. And then we can say, hey, listen, this is what we're producing in our community. Let's trade. Because that's what allies, that's what those relationships are based on. They're based on security and they're based on trade. Right now we have nothing to trade. We have nothing to offer. We're not even organized. So
well,
I love
true.
Your
that,
idea.
That was, oh,
no, well, I, no, I'm saying, so I love the idea. I love the idea. It's just like, you know, we got to start. We got to start.
Well, that's true, but also to the extent of, I wanted to say, even though we have nothing to trade, we – all those other countries, they may not be far as just as powerful, but you know, like I said, Africa is a huge continent and it's several countries. And with that being said, even though you still have it's a difference between this is black community understands the difference between a friend and an ally. We can have somebody that may not even just – that might have a little more power in Africa or whatever, but the main goal is to take down white supremacy. That's the goal. Because once white supremacy falls, then black people – that's why right now that I do agree with what you're saying, that we need to have trades, we need to do this, we need to learn how to do things of our own, because eventually white supremacy will fall and the revolution will not be televised. And that is the truth. And when it falls, what are black people going to do?
Yep.
So, I do agree with you.
Yeah.
That's it, brother.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. All right, so we have Brother Damba in the queue. Brother Damba. Yes, brother.
No, you guys go ahead. You already answered. I already heard my question and my answer. I already answered the $20 piece, so y'all fine. You can go ahead to the next one.
Okay, well, thank you, brother. Appreciate it. We have a caller from 646 area code. Caller, your name? Hello, caller, 646? Oh, shoot. Oh, shoot. I just kicked somebody out today. Unbelievable. Hopefully they call back in. All right, so that was a pretty good dialogue, guys. So the consensus is, we tell them no, they can't be members, which is what I already said. But we will take their money. Okay, the caller from 646. Hold on. Caller 646 area code. I'm sorry, I clicked the wrong button. Your name?
This is Muga. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. This is,
yeah,
I'm sorry, your name is?
My name is actually Mahamudu Denkrumo. As you can tell, I'm from Africa.
Okay.
I've been in the U.S. since 2004. I came as a student, and eventually I didn't have all the means to, you know, stay in school. Got out of college, but I kept my focus and my goal on my business on, and right now I'm a network engineer.
So,
I was listening. A lot of people made valuable points. I speak French, by the way. So if I kind of have a little English fallout, don't mind it. First thing I've noticed, as you said, we think Africans, we think that, okay, African-Americans don't like us. Let me tell you what I had in mind before I took off from Africa. And
Real quick, brother, could you either turn up your phone or speak more into the thing, because you kind of faded off, and this is important.
Can you hear me now, brother?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, go ahead.
So when I was taking off from Africa to the U.S., on my mind, I was coming to see my brothers. okay, I'm coming to see my brothers, black people. I was so excited. That's one of the most important things that I had in mind. I'm coming to see my people. I was so happy. However, when you get here, the reception that you get as an African, people call them booty scratchers and everything. So you get really, I was in New York. I stayed in New York 4 years before moving to Chicago here. You get really disappointed. One day I was driving in Manhattan doing a newspaper delivery, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I got to a stop light. There was this truck on my left side, and there is a brother right there. So I turned around and I looked at him, and we kind of crossed eyes, and he was looking at me so angrily. I was sad internally. I didn't understand how a brother can look at another brother with such anger. I don't know what his day was. But that look really, really saddened me. But that's not the problem. The problem that we have to do is to know how to deal with ourselves and know that regardless of what it is, the fact that we are black, that's the only ground that we have to sustain and know that we belong to each other. So,
right.
You can look at me any way you want. If you go further more, a black man is going to look at you as a black guy or black, whatever it is it's called. Almost the same thing when I get there. So we will have more to gain if we unite and cover each other back than try to be each other's enemy. So that's an example of what I've gone through as experience. But at first, though, so when I came in, the situation to me was like, okay, everything that I thought I was going to see in the black community is totally wrong. Violence, drugs, and girls or men don't have manners, and all that is related to the family. If you don't have a sustainable family to train you, to show you how to behave, this is what you're going to act. You feel like you don't care about anything. Well, anything, but anything cares about you. And whatever you do has an importance. How you're walking, how you're talking, how you're smiling, how you're doing this. It has an importance. It's very important. One thing I've noticed here in the U.S., my neighbor, I cannot give a whipping to my neighbor's kid if he's done something wrong. Right now, I have a 6-year-old son. My rule is, if you see my son do anything wrong, don't wait for me. Correct him. Don't wait for him. You are entitled to be his father as much as I am when I'm not around, because you're putting him in the right path. Correct him. I'm not saying abuse or try to hurt him. No, correct him. Let him know, give him a whipping or whatever it is. Yeah, he's entitled to that. So, basically, we have the ground, the foundation, the family foundation, even if there are no fathers or mothers. We have to have people like uncles, grandmothers, or sisters to step in and take the role. Like when I was friends, as far as I'm concerned, I lost my father when I was 4. They have to move in my uncle into our big family house because I was the only boy. My uncle is, actually I'm calling him uncle, but he's not my uncle. He's my grandmother's brother. So he is sort of a grandfather to me. So in Africa, usually, normally, the grandfather doesn't beat you, he spoils you. However, he is a man, and I'm the only man in the house of the family left. He can't be that loving, spoiling grandfather to me. If not something, I'm not going to be turn out to be the one or the person I am today. So he's right. Been very strict with me. I'm going to tell you, I'm a handful boy. I've been there. I'm probably still, iPad and now. But I'm not condoning everything he's done to me, but the fact that he's been strict to me allowed me to find my path. Because every time I try to go astray, he puts me back to the right path. He reminds me that you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. One time I even thought about, you know, running away from the house. But I thank God. I thank God when you have a mind of yourself, you get to accomplish a lot of things. I was thinking about, okay, he doesn't like me. He blah, 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 blah. He's doing this to me. He's doing this to me. I was 17 at that time. By the time I realized, I came to realize that actually whatever good I'm doing today is going to affect me more than it's going to affect him. So if I run away, I'm not going to finish school, then what is my future?
Right.
I can go run away, stay with my friends and everything. They'll be going to school and everything. But personally, in the future, what is, how is this going to happen? What is my life? What am I going to do? So my focus at that time is just, okay, that's when I realized that everything I'm going to do today, even if I'm trying to get back to my uncle, I'm not actually hurting him. I'm hurting myself in the long run. So it's better for me to focus and do what is right, just finish school, get my high school degree and everything. I was going to come to the U.S. after that. And that's my goal, get to my college, get my high school degree and everything. Thank you.
So basically, all right. So basically, what I hear you saying, I'm sorry for cutting you off. You know, we just coming up on 11 o'clock. And you know, we want to, you know, start rounding this up. But basically, what you're saying is, you feel that there is a breakdown in the home and the family structure, and then that is what is leading to this. You know, to the larger problems is basically what you're saying.
Exactly, a lot.
Okay.
It's not a lot of. We have a lot of single mothers. I'm not gonna say that all single mothers can. I do not handle this. I saw some single mothers, the kids were behaving properly in a really likable manner, but a lot of them don't care. Somebody said, "How can you teach a parent that doesn't know how to be a parent to be a parent?" So it's a sort of a sensibilization and training and keeping our people focused. The alliance in Africa is possible because in Africa, we still, even though now it's a scarce, we're still trying our best to get the white. Everything that involves us, we don't want any white or European coming into it. We don't want that. So to get a sort of alliance with Africans, I think we have doctors, we have engineers, we have a lot of people here that work in the U.S. that have experience. What we can do is, for instance, have a delegation of those people or representative of Black Lives Matter go to Africa, meet some of the leaders and say, okay, we are from America, we know the story, blah, 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 blah. We think we need to come back home and get our sort of, inspiration. We need help back in America, and we can bring you help. We need engineers. Like, my dream is to get 2 or 4 more years of experience in here in America, and I'm going back to Africa, open my own business to help my community. My goal is to bring anything or invent and create anything that can make life easy. Because of technology, we can succeed within everything, whether it's culture, food, eating, make life easy. That's my goal. So,
okay. All right, brother. Listen, hold on. We got a few people that are getting off. I have people that were texting me good night and things like that. I'm sorry that it, you know, took you kind of got in the queue a little bit late in the evening, but every single thing you said, and to summarize for anyone that was listening, so the brother is saying that we need to, we can form the alliance with Africa, we can provide technology and, you know, certain skills. We can learn skills here, take them over there. Maybe even be, I guess he said, to come back home. So maybe we can even gain dual citizenship like every other
yeah.
place, right? And I think Ghana offers that now. They offer dual citizenship. So it is something to look at. But I want to let everyone, you know, I want to summarize this. You know, we're coming up on 11 o'clock. And I want to invite all the guests on the call. I want to thank you for attending, all the members. I want to thank you for coming on. And if anyone hasn't had the chance to watch the blueprint, go to the website, blackwalletsmatter.org. Click the menu button. The blueprint is there. If it resonates with you, then we invite you to become a member. We still are in our 2,000 member campaign. We invite you to become a member. And if you have any other questions or concerns, you can call me. There's a number on the site where it says contact us. My name is Brother Lou. And I want to thank everyone for attending this evening. I'm going to unmute all the mics. And, you know, and just want to get some feedback. Well, we had a few people that left, but specifically, I have you, I didn't hear your name, but I wrote Brother Africa on the, I'm sorry, man, because I couldn't catch your name, but I'm going to unmute everyone's phone, and I want to mute. All right, so I'm just going to say, okay. Okay, M, you got M-U-V-A?
M-U-D-A, like Mahamudi.
Yeah, okay, Brother Mudi. Okay, got you. Yep, okay. So, Brother, so I'm going to unmute everyone's phone, and then specifically I would like to get some feedback from Brother Dean, Brother Russ, Sister Allison, and Brother Muda. You actually can give us your feedback as well. Hold on, let me just unmute. Okay. Okay, so wait. So, Brother Dean. Okay, I don't know if he's still on. Brother Russ, you have any feedback for us?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. I had a great time listening to everyone. Opened my eyes to a lot of different perspectives, and I just wanted to see, you know, I want to grow with y'all. That's all. You know,
okay, excellent.
I
want to
do the
that.
Same thing you want to do.
Yeah, I'll text you. You can hit me behind the scenes, and what we can do is you can tell me about what it was that you were doing. You can tell me about your blueprint, about your plan, and we can go from there. All right?
All right.
Okay. Let's see here. Sister Allison.
Yes. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, a little feedback from you, sister. This was your first town hall.
Yeah, it was definitely very, you know, a lot of information, a lot of good dialogue, very engaging conversation. So it was something that I really, you know, enjoyed being a part of.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, well, Brother Dean, he left. And brother Muda, how about you? A little feedback?
Yes, I like it all. I think we should push it through and try to start somewhere. We have to start somewhere. We're not gonna get it all along all the time right there. But we go and we learn. We can implement and improvise while we're going. I really, really feel strongly about the fund of, you know, trying our best to get a fund and try to get all these Asians and Arabs out of the black neighborhood. I really like that idea. I love that
okay.
idea.
Excellent, brother. All right. So I want to thank everyone for calling in tonight, for attending. And we are going to stop recording now.